What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm so happy to have you all here today. Today I have a wonderful guest, Claire Young, who's with us. And I'll bring her on in just a minute. And we're going to be talking about the leadership training that we both attended with Al Gore on climate reality and all of its facts and actions, and particularly along the lines of social environmental justice. And, of course, at the end of the radio show, I lead you into a transformative meditation. So please stay tuned for that as well. But first, as always, I want to open the show with a quote. And this quote is from the famous anthropologist Margaret Mead, and she said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." And I really like this quote because it gives us hope that with action, with using our voice as citizens and thoughtful people, that we really can make a difference. And of course, in this American democracy, we are called to investigate truth, to discern the facts, to determine if the policies of our government, whether local or national or even global, the United Nations, et cetera, are aligned with our values and our needs. So then we can speak up with our voices, our actions, and our votes. So just to introduce the topic of the global climate crisis, and these come from Al Gore's presentation that came from this training, and that website is climaterealityproject.org. Let me introduce a few facts about our climate crisis right now. So our global environment is really at a tipping point in regards to the climate changes that are going on. And there are so many facts. It is really very clear. For example, I'll give you this one. We are dumping 110 million tons of man-made pollution into the Earth's atmosphere every day, every 24 hours. 100 million tons of man-made pollution. Wow. And, of course, the Earth's atmosphere is very thin. It's not very, very big around this planet. And so we're filling it up with this man-made pollution. We're not talking about natural pollution. This is 110 million tons of man-made pollution. And as this carbon dioxide concentration increases, more of the sun's heat, its infrared radiation, is trapped into our atmosphere, which warms the planet. And so the 16 of the 17 hottest years on record have occurred since the year 2001. That's just amazing. I mean, here we are in 2019, and we've had 16 of the 17 hottest years in the last 18 years. Now, the oceans are absorbing most of this heat, actually, and with that, though, this is coming a lot of problems because the warmer oceans actually cause the more powerful storms to happen more than when the oceans were cooler, and it's because the storms carry more water. You know, more water evaporates in this warm climate. The warm oceans produce more water vapor. So these storms are rain bombing cities and rural areas and causing flooding. Flooding that hasn't occurred not just in like 1 in 100 years or 1 even in 1,000 years, but my family lives in Texas and lives in Houston, for example, and then this is where I grew up, and their house is flooded 3 times to where they've really had to rebuild significantly. They've had to, you know, take out all the drywall and the carpet and rebuild their kitchen and all of the, I mean, it was a mess. And particularly in 2017, Hurricane Harvey, its 5-day rain total was equivalent to a 1 in 25,000 year event. I mean, just think about that. I don't know how quite they figure that out. But the point is that we haven't had that kind of rain total in at least the known human history. And in fact, a city called Netherlands, Texas, received 5 feet of rain in that one event, that one hurricane. And that's the greatest single storm rainfall total on record in the United States. Another thing that happened that we saw on these slideshows was that Miami streets are now flooding with normal high tides. And it's bringing fish and octopus to swim on the boulevards. They're trying to pump out the water, but, you know, it's hard to pump the ocean. So they're actually raising the streets. But the predicted sea level rise is not just 1 foot, is what Miami's rebuilding its streets at 1 foot higher, but actually up to like 7 feet. So we've got all this flooding happening all over the world, not just, of course, in the United States, but in Mumbai, India in 2017, 1,400 people died in flooding across Southeast Asia. It's amazing with the flooding, but then the opposite is happening as well, to where that extra heat that's trapped in from the sun, that's evaporating the water from the oceans up into these storms, is also pulling the moisture more quickly from the soil, and that's causing longer and deeper droughts. And we've seen more fires happen in the last 45 years here in the United States, terrible, huge fires like the one in Paradise, California in November 2008 that actually took out this radio station, BBS Radio, and, of course, its owners and their property, not to mention, of course, for all the other people in that area, the loss of life and the property is just horrendous. So humanity is really at the point where we must act in the next 10 to 15 years to change the way we're using the Earth and her resources and to really switch from these fossil fuels that are causing these emissions over to renewable energy. So on our show today, we're going to be talking about Al Gore and his Climate Reality Project. And he does have these leadership trainings that happen at least twice a year around the world. And it's a 3-day event that trains attendees on climate issues and how to build programs within their community. So it actually gives you the data and the grassroots skills to be able to work with your congressmen, your representatives, your senators, your organizations in your area, like-minded people, and to start to put in these renewable energies. And I really loved that the Atlanta training that was done this last week was all about social and environmental justice. It was called a moral call to action. Because, of course, here in Atlanta, we're talking about civil rights. We're talking about the Center for Civil and Human Rights is located here. And, of course, the Martin Luther King Jr. Church is here and his ministry that is still alive and well. We've got lots of focus on social justice and environmental justice here in this city. So the southeastern part of the United States is also the recipient of a lot of the poor areas, and the people who are underserved and in economic crisis are also being targeted for the climate crisis, in that power plants are placed in poor neighborhoods. So we will talk about all of this. Let me bring on my guest. And her name is Claire Young, and she, as I said, just recently completed this climate reality leadership training with me as well here in Atlanta, Georgia. She is a freelance professional ballet dancer and artist. And her website, you can find out more about Claire at ClaireYoungArt.com. That's ClaireYoungArt.com. And as I said, if you want to find out more about the Climate Reality Project website, its website is climaterealityproject.org. So welcome, Claire, to the Peace Brain Show.
Hi, Gail. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you, too. It was amazing at that training. There were over 2,300 people at the training. And so I know I had an amazing time, a fun time, an awe-inspiring time. How about you? How was your training experience?
I found it life-changing. Really? I mean, both my husband and I were like a little, I kind of drug him into it. We were a little reluctant because both introverted people, this seemed like a very big problem. We're so used to being kind of the lone wolves with this, you know, addressing this problem in our community, it feels like. So it kind of, you felt like you're just alone in the forest shouting about a problem that everyone's ignoring. So to be in that room with so many people, especially, I was so happy they put us in at a table with local people. So it was nice to see, like, who in my community also cares as much about this as me and also is just as motivated to do something about it. I think one of the most powerful things that, you know, finding that sense of community and people that really do care about this, I think, really brought a lot of confidence out in me, I think, that I didn't have before.
Yes, that's an excellent point. I think you're right. When you can form that working group, your tribe, you know, find your support group, in other words, that really makes a difference. And I have to give a shout-out to Naeem Adier. He's a friend of mine's son. He's a friend of mine. Naeem is. He's 16 years old, and he really wanted to come to this training, and he was able to get in. They recently moved from Atlanta to Fort Worth, Texas, so he started an environmental justice club at his high school, and he was saying the same thing you just mentioned, that it was so nice to be in a room of people that really think the same way, can support this process and really help each other to get the word out, because I think we're not really talking about climate change. We are acknowledging the storms, we're acknowledging the floods and the droughts and the fires, but we're not talking about how to change it and how to make, there are solutions, in other words.
Right.
So tell me, what drew you to this?
Climate reality specifically, or just the addressing the climate crisis?
Well, I guess a little of both.
So basically, I think to start from the beginning, it's kind of a process, and I think that's the thing I learned to get people to understand. It was a little bit of a process for me to fully grasp. And mainly started with, you know, I grew up in Alpharetta, so in the suburbs of Atlanta, in a nice little bubble where I wasn't really seeing any problems. I was just going about my life, and then when we moved to Chattanooga, we had an apartment complex that did a trash service, and they didn't do recycling. So I would come home late from teaching and dancing, and that's when they were picking up the trash, and I noticed how much trash just one side of an apartment complex makes. And I was shocked, and I was like, I cannot believe that just, like, my hallway made this much trash in a week. So then I'm thinking about all the other houses and homes and apartment complexes just in my small vicinity is making that much trash. So that made me want to explore and learn more about, okay, well, where does my trash go? Where does this come from? Where does my food go? So I think it started to build on itself. Okay, I learned, oh, this is what's happening in the landfills. Okay, so what can I do to change that? And then it became, you know, a step-by-step process to learning more. And once I started to realize how bad things were getting, and I don't think the media does the best job of covering just how dire things are, and hopefully that changes soon. But, you know, so once I started to become more interested in this topic, you do feel kind of like a lone wolf and somebody that, you know, people don't like to talk about it. I was, you know, grown up as a Southern girl where you just have polite conversation and you don't bring up things that are controversial.
Right.
That's one thing. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, I've always kind of kept my mouth shut. I'll mention it a little bit if somebody asks. But, you know, eventually it kind of does wear on you. It feels like an overwhelming problem. And I decided as a, you know, I'm a zero waster. Once, you know, I learned that there was something I could do about my choices as a consumer that affects my car, you know, my carbon footprint. I made those choices and then would learn more and make more, you know, I thought, okay, I watch my carbon footprint and I vote for representatives that say they will help the climate crisis. And I thought, you know, wipe my hands. I'm done. I did my part. But then I was like, you know, you see all these people and especially these young people have been incredibly inspiring, really getting out there and doing something about it. And it made me think, you know, you kind of always have in your head that that somebody else with that kind of personality or have a gift for this kind of thing. Those are the people that really go out and do that, and I'm doing my part quietly. But then I sort of had an epiphany of, well, everybody has a skin in this game. So why am I letting other people try to solve this problem for me? So mm-hmm. I kind of over in my New Year's resolution was, you know what, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and actually get to work and do something, even though I'm not very confident. I'm not sure what I can do. I'm going to do everything I can to try. So I saw that Climate Reality was coming to Atlanta, and it was such a blessing that I happened to look it up right as, you know, they were accepting applications. And I was like, we have to do this. I was telling my husband, I was like, people are paying and flying from all over the world to come to Atlanta to do this, and we live here. So
yes.
We absolutely, yeah. And especially with, like, it seemed like such a great organization, especially being run by Al Gore, and he knew all these, like, scientists were coming to talk. And, you know, and one of the problems we always had with, like, how do we get started? Where do I start? I don't know what to do. I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. So even trying to just Google local organizations is difficult to navigate. So when this came up, I said, that is exactly what we need. And it's like, they're going to do everything for us, basically. Here's the problem. Here's the solution. Here are groups near you that you can join and, you know, organize. And so I was like, we absolutely have to do this. This is the only way. I signed us up, and I will never regret it. That was such a great decision. We missed out on a few paychecks, but it was worth every, you know, every stress and losing a little bit of a paycheck to be able to do this. And I'm so glad. It was just, you know, it's really making me feel excited to get to work and get, you know, I can do something even as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Well put, well put. Absolutely. It is, we can each do what you started out with, all the different things, recycling, knowing, being, I was going to say go vegan, in other words, you know, knowing what we eat.
Right.
Using less, no plastic, preferably zero waste, all that good stuff, which is really hard to do, obviously, in our society and in an urban center. But we can all do our part. But it's so much more than that. It really is, as was put in the presentations, about the burning of the fossil fuels. And,
right.
You know, there's so many other ways that we're getting carbon into the atmosphere, but that is the number one way. And so, yeah, so what do we do about it? I know that here in Atlanta we're blessed with a lot of industries that are actually working, like South Base Energy Institute, working to do energy audits and help people make the transition into renewables. We do have a monopoly, Georgia Power, which, you know, mm-hmm. provides wonderful electricity for our city, and is looking into solar, but it's how do we get the citizens involved to demand the solar or demand some wind farms off-site from the city or different solutions that are available. So it's really about getting citizens pumped and involved, I think, and certainly electing the representatives also that support that. What
right.
are your next steps that you're thinking? I know, go ahead. To do besides this radio show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks again. Yeah, that's my first step. I said, you know, if I'm going to need to be talking in front of people, which I'm uncomfortable doing, this is a good stepping stone to get me to be a little more confident. And like I said, we all have a voice. We all have skin in the game. So we need to play in the game. So basically, I think as big and overwhelming as the problem is and how it is, we have to convert how we power everything. So it seems like such a problem. And I think that, you know, most people in my bubble ignore it because it's easier. So it's a difficult to try to get people to understand and vote in their for their interest. So I think starting small and then trying to grow to understand, to get people to understand and to get them to vote for representatives that will do the right thing and also demand that who is already in office will also do the right thing, because they are the representatives of the people and not of just the people that voted for them or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, you need to listen to what all of the people want, and this is what we want and what we need. But it's just a matter of getting people to understand that this is what they need. Because that's the difficult thing.
Yes, and to do it in a time, as you just said, of prosperity, of comfort, right. of comfort, because we're not being truly affected. I mean, I know we are being affected, but fortunately, most of us think that going about our daily lives, going to work, driving our cars, going to the grocery store, taking our kids to school, we're not really affected by the climate crisis. And yet, if you live, like I said, of my family in Houston or out in California with the fires, you've got these events happening that are horrendous and literally wipe out people's lives. And I mean, obviously they kill people, but they also wipe out their livelihood and their place to live and literally have to start from scratch with what's on their back. And that's just, that's terrible. I know, I hate to think that humanity has to have all these tragedies just to wake us up, and that we have to have personal experience of tragedies to do something about it. So what I really liked about this presentation of the climate leadership training and Al Gore's presentations was really hearing from the people who had experienced these terrible situations. I know there were a lot of on the ground residents that came and spoke at that leadership training, but also all the scientists that were there that spoke from the different universities, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, University of Georgia, all kinds of, you know, it's just local here, but many others that came in to speak about the science behind it. And hopefully by hearing someone else's story, we can develop enough compassion and charge to action that we can, not just you and I who've taken the training, but everyone listening, please, you know, start by talking to your representatives and realizing that it really is a moral choice. It's a moral choice to go from fossil fuels into the renewables. And we have these solutions. That was the wonderful thing about it, is there's so much solar industry really provides more jobs and more economic prosperity than the fossil fuel industry. That just blew me away. And I think there was a fact, something like for 1 hour of sunlight that we, I hope I'm getting this right. I'm looking for the slide right now. But for 1 hour that the sun shines on the earth, all over the earth, we can receive enough energy to power all of humanity for an entire year.
Wow.
That's just an amazing fact. And, of course, that means we still have to put up the solar arrays and make them go to all the different urban centers. But there is that much power in our sun, obviously, to be able to just, and that's just solar power. That's not wind and water power as well.
Right.
Take a breath.
The thing especially that I loved about the training was when he was showing us like the connections of everything, I guess. I always compartmentalized the problems that we're facing, you know, like, okay, we have immigration's a problem, we have, you know, the hurricane's a problem, this is a problem, and then it was like, actually, they're all connected to this one thing that's a bubble, you know, causing everything, you know, to ripple effect, and we know what's causing it, and we have solutions to it, so it seems like a no-brainer to the rest of us, but it's just a matter of getting the general public to make those connections themselves, and be like, look, this is what's happening. This is why it's happening. We can do something about it. You also are a part of that and have to do something. It's not somebody else who's going to do it for you. You do. So I think that was crazy to see, that everything's connected. Everything, you know, your health, it's going to affect every single person. It will affect the, you know, more disenfranchised, lower income communities of color first, and already is, but it will get to you, you know. So it is one of those. Like, this is something we can do something about. I think that's the big takeaway, too. Like, there is something we can do. We have solutions to the problem, and let's do it. Seems like no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was just finding this slide, and this is a worldwide, I believe. He has a data point of saying economic losses from extreme weather totaled $653 billion over the past 2 years alone.
Wow.
So that's just, I mean, again, there are so many, and I'll call it a moral imperative reasons to change, and not just obviously all the, and you're right, everything's connected, from not only the droughts and the fires and the floods, but from pandemic diseases. You know, the insects are being able to go into these warmer areas and spread more quickly and have more disease spreads. And as you said, it's also a social justice issue of these communities of color or low-income communities are being targeted to be the ones that are having the most impact. It's just the way that we... It does kind of put... I was going to say it's the way that we do our economic system, that we put it in these larger businesses. I'm thinking of the hog farms in North Carolina, for example, that when the hurricane came in and all the hog waste went into the rivers and the streams and into people's homes, and they couldn't drink the water for months, and I'm not even sure if they still can from the last major storm. So it's, what are the ethics or the morals? This is where my heart goes to, is it's about waking up as a humanity that we really do have brothers and sisters around the planet. And even if you don't want to go there, you can say, well, I have brothers and sisters in my neighborhood or in my city or in my county, and I really need to change the way my city is doing this. Wasn't there a city in Texas? I know there was, that was given an example, that had gone 100% renewable. Do you remember the name of that?
I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember. Yeah.
I know there was, it's a famous example because the mayor, who was not originally for renewables, looked at is a CPA, and actually looked at the economics of it and said, gee, this is really better for my town and my county. And so he made his entire town 100% renewable. And it's just, yeah, it's amazing. And obviously, it's not about a partisan issue. This is one thing that, how can I put it? This isn't a Republican or a Democratic or a liberal issue. Climate change is a humanitarian issue. And certainly
right.
We need to then have our government reflect those humanitarian goals. And if our politicians do not want to address this, then we need to find politicians who will. Because, as you said, it's going to affect everyone if it isn't already.
Right. Yeah, that is. I think that's one of the biggest problems to face, is this isn't political. This isn't obviously policy has to be involved for us to make changes, but it's not a us versus them situation. And anytime someone, when I try to talk about the climate crisis, they want to be like, oh, well, liberal, conservative. I'm like, no. Don't think about that. This is something everybody has to think about. And I was like, this doesn't have to do with it. You've been trained to think that it is a partisan issue. But that's the biggest challenge, to get people to understand that this is everybody, and the only way we'll solve it is by working more together and not separating ourselves from each other. The only way things will get done is if we come together as a community. And especially, how do you get people to care about other people? So that is a difficult one.
That's the challenge right there. If your family isn't affected directly, or that you can see and experience economic loss or health risk from your own family, then how do we start to care about the, quote, other? And I think that's really the issue is there are no others. You know, it's all about us.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, I'm looking again at some of these facts and what was here, and I guess I would encourage everyone to listen, who's listening, to go to climaterealityproject.org to find out more, and maybe actually ask the leaders who have been trained in your area to give a presentation for your school, for your church, your synagogue, for your community organization, or maybe even your corporate organization, to give a presentation with these facts, because there are amazing stories to be told. And that's what really, you know, as humans, we're all about stories. So what is your personal story? What is your kind of And I'm not necessarily asking you that, Claire, but what I'm saying is, what are the personal stories out there? And that's so empowering, because it's not, as I said, it's about hearing a few of these personal stories and realizing that, wow, let me get behind this and let me get my corporation behind it so that we can have some power to really start changing little by little, and yet we don't have too much time to do this, but every action counts. So I actually have a story that I want to share, and this came from, it happens to be a slide on Al Gore's presentation as well, but I was fortunate enough to go to the Parliament of World Religions in last November in Toronto, Canada, and attend that parliament, that summit, with 8,500 other people, faith leaders from all over the world, talking about climate issues. It was climate issues, was climate change, and the crisis was one of six major tracks at this Parliament of World Religions. And it was really encouraging faith leaders around the world to talk about the moral, the ethics, in other words, about working with our brother and our sister around the world, and that we really do need, as a global economy, need to work together. But there was this one reverend from South Africa, from Cape Town, South Africa, and she, Rachel Mass, I think is her name. I'm sorry, I may have that incorrectly. But she spoke before the entire parliament, and she talked about how Cape Town, in early 2018, just last year, was running out of water. And it was going to be faced with day zero, which meant that 3 million people in the town of Cape Town were going to have no water in their taps at day zero. So just think about that for a minute. I mean, about if you go to turn on the water and there is no water. Talk about personally being affected. So. Yeah. They had seen from, I believe they had like the last 3 years had been extreme drought due to these climate changes, the climate crisis we're in. And so the reservoirs were running very low, and they were monitoring the reservoir and how low it was, how fast it was falling. And they realized they had about a month left. In other words, they had a date, you know, like April 30th or somewhere around there was day zero. And so what happened is, of course, everyone got together in the whole city. First of all the businesses shut down and all the schools shut down because you had no toilets and no running water that they wanted to use for public access. And then everyone started conserving water. They would take 1 minute showers every other day. They would use the shower water to then mop the floors. And then they'd use the floor water to go out and water the gardens. And so they cut back, they just use hand sanitizer to wash their hands instead of, and dry shampoo. You know, so they actually cut their water consumption down to 50% within the first week or two. And so gradually they started to push off day zero further and farther away. And fortunately, last year the rains came early, and they were able to fill up the reservoirs enough. But as she was saying, because this conference was in November, and of course their summer starts around October, November, December, their summer begins. She said that October day when she left Cape Town to come to Toronto was the hottest October ever measured in their records. So I don't know how they're doing now. This is obviously, we're talking in March 2019 here. I haven't checked to see how Cape Town is doing, but as she said, we're just the canary in the coal mine. Cape Town is, and its day zero is just the tip of the iceberg, to say, a terrible metaphor there, but that at least 10 other cities around the planet who are really large cities like Beijing and others, I can't remember exactly which one she named, from every continent except Antarctica, are facing day zero, and so or will soon be facing day zero, in other words. So really, think about it. How would it be to run out of water? I mean, water is life. That we depend on it. And I know the way we develop our cities is not ecologically sustainable. We need to make sure the water resources are stay clear and clean and are available for everyone, and that we do have the reservoirs, as Cape Town was depending on, that will last not just a few years, but multi-generations. So anyway, I share that story because it was so powerful to hear her speak and to realize, oh my gosh, you know, it's, what would it be if Atlanta didn't have water? We have 6.5 million people here in Atlanta. So it's, it gets kind of scary.
Yeah, I think, and then hearing things like that brings me back to what he was saying, how we're going to have resource wars. Like, we're going to have more death and destruction caused by each other because we're running out of resources and human nature is going to kick in and we're going to fight for survival. And so who do you think is going to come out on top? The privileged, the rich, who are also keeping us down. So it all is going to, if you want to, you know, stop this problem from happening, because it is going to happen, start now. Otherwise, we will be no water and we will be fighting for basic necessities for survival. And we, you know, it's 2019. It's hard to believe that that is our future, but it is. And we have to change, and there's something we have to do about it. You know, I think my mother-in-law, like all good mother-in-laws, keeps bugging me for a grandchild. And I'm putting it off. And I, you know, I'm like, yes, I want to bring a child. But also at the same time, I'm like, God, we have some of the projections for how hot it is and how bad it will be just by, you know, 2050. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, my child, if I have it in the next 2 years, will be a 20-year-old young person. And it could be horrible situation by then. And I have to face them and say I didn't do anything about this and I could have. I just can't. I think we need to think more future and more growth, and you know, and we still stay too stagnant and even go backwards sometimes, and you know, history seems to repeat itself constantly, and that is not a cliche. We see it happening. So I'm hopeful for the future, and I'm hopeful for these kids that are doing something about it because they have to, because it's their future. The people making decisions for us are going to be gone, so we're going to be around to face the consequences, and our children will be around to face the consequences, and I want to fight to keep that from happening.
Exactly. And thanks for bringing up the kids. Again, it's about the youth. I know, ironically or serendipitously, on Friday of the training was the Fridays for Future march that happened all over the world by youth in every country. And, of course, the youth here at the training also got out with their placards and out on the grass and walked to Centennial Park and were striking for the climate. It's important for youth to take action, and it really is. No movement happens anywhere in the world without solidarity, without working in mass groups like the civil rights movement here in the United States. It takes really changing the mindset of the people in power at the moment, the people who are controlling whatever the issue is. And, of course, I'm thinking about some great movements that happened. And things that we've changed already, we've been able to change we're still working on changing our farming. I was going to bring in organic farming. We're still working, obviously, with GMOs and to prevent those from taking over. The mindset of industry has been profit over people, and that's really what needs to change. And I feel confident and hopeful that the youth here are really going to make that, you know, one of their forefront missions is to talk about people over profit instead.
Right.
Yeah. So this is, well, go ahead. What's on your mind?
No, I mean, you're right. I think that's the biggest thing that worries me the most, and the corruption that we see all the time, because, you know, they knew this was happening. It's not even an ignorance thing, especially the people in power. They knew this was happening and chose to put Band-Aids on things when they came up instead of solving the problem, because they would lose money. And they're the ones that aren't going to be affected by it. It's going to be everybody else. So it's just, how do you get people to, this is for your best interest, like vote and keep the people in power, keep your representatives doing what they need to do for the interest of the people and not profits. And, you know, with Citizens United, which was, I think, the biggest
mistake to ever happen to our democracy. And so, of course, if a corporation can have a politician in their pocket, and especially a corporation like ExxonMobil, who basically started this whole issue and had their own scientists tell them before, you know, the public even knew, hey, this is happening, you guys are causing it, they chose to ignore it because they chose profit over the people. So they were just hoping to sweep it under the rug and that we would never know about it. But guess what? We all know. So, yeah, how do we get the people to mobilize to get their representatives to do what they need to do in our best interest and not for the profit of corporations?
Well, and that gets back to the question of, or what was being talked about at the Parliament of World Religions, and that was also seen here during this training here in Atlanta, the climate leadership training. There was a moral call to action on the climate crisis interface gathering that happened at the Martin Luther King Jr. Ebenezer Baptist Church, which was just amazing. I don't know, were you there, Claire? Were you able to attend that?
No, I wasn't. We heard all about it, and we were so sad. We had a family obligation, but I heard it was incredible.
It was. And, in fact, I think everyone, if you go to the Climate Reality Project's Facebook page, they did live stream it. You kind of have to go through a couple of layers of finding where that event is posted on their Facebook page. But they did live stream it, and it's 2.5 hours. It was really remarkable because it had the Georgia Interfaith Power and Light, Executive Director Reverend Kate McGregor Mosley, and, of course, former Vice President Al Gore was there, with Reverend Dr. William Barber II, who started the Poor People's Campaign, and then his son was also there, William Barber III, and then Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock is the actual reverend of the Ebenezer Baptist Church now. Also, Rabbi Lydia Medwin was there with Imam Arshad Anwar was there from the Islamic faith. So, and then also an elder, a Native American elder was there as well. I don't have her name in front of me, though. But it was wonderful to hear from all of these different viewpoints, from the sacred texts and from their teachings, of just what we're talking about. You know, there is no other. It is all about our stewardship of the earth and not our dominion over the earth. They pointed out actually really beautifully that the stewardship really is like a mother taking care of a child, not that what we think of sometimes or what's talked about in some of these very extreme faith groups that talk about dominion over the earth and we've got to use all of its resources and extract it all out and get the profits from it. That's not what these sacred faith traditions talk about. And there was a rabbi gave a beautiful example of a traveler going by and seeing a burning house and wondering, who is the master of that house? Who's the owner of the house? And suddenly this person appears waving out of the window of the house, and he realizes that's God in the house. And the house is burning, and that if you're in the house and you're in the kitchen with, you know, God, it's God's house, in other words, but when you're in the house and in the kitchen, well, it may be the bedroom that's burning, so you're in the kitchen, you feel like everything's good because it's just burning in the bedroom, but someone's sleeping in the bedroom, and the fire's spreading to the kitchen and to the living room, and so it's, you know, we're all in this together. It's all one house, in other words. And we have time to put out the fire, and we have solutions to put out the fire. It's just, do we care about the people in the other room to do so?
Right. And it's interesting. I mean, it might have been touched on a little bit, but I was raised Christian. And it's always been sort of my church to be outside and in nature, and that's where I feel God the most, because this is what he created, this is what we were called to take care of, and everything was designed perfectly. I even see that when I'm a big composter, and it's funny when you try to explain this to other people that call themselves Christians, like, well, why is that important to do something so simple? And I was like, look, this was designed by design for your food to break down and become food again for the rest of the earth. Same thing with our bodies. They break down and create new life, and everything was designed that way, and we are all the animals and insects and every kind of creature on the earth affects the other creatures. So you always see when human intervention happens, we bring this species in to wipe out this species, it causes a bunch of problems. Maybe things were designed intelligently the way they were supposed to be, and we are the wrench in the situation, not taking care of our planet and not living a symbiosis of all the God creation together, and we are failing horribly.
Exactly. No, you're so correct. The ecological system is one and is all connected, and we can't just take a piece of it and destroy it and expect the whole thing to work well. It was also pointed out in that Ebenezer Interfaith service that even if you're atheist, even if you don't have a faith, that our U.S. Constitution talks about caring for the earth, evidently. And I haven't looked that up personally. I encourage everyone to go do that. But the point is, it starts with, as really was brought to forefront, it starts with we the people. And we have to work together to care for the earth. We have to work together and not hurt each other. I mean, we are the people of the United States. And so no one is lesser than anyone else, or no one is greater than anyone else, even if maybe economically you are. But that doesn't mean as a person you don't deserve the rights to, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So it's really a moral imperative for everyone to get together behind solving this climate crisis. And as we said, there are numerous solutions. The main one is to begin the transitions from the fossil fuel industry into the renewable industry and train people for these new jobs and know that multiple jobs will be out there. So we're getting towards the end of the show, Claire. Grappled fast. What would you like to leave our listeners with? What are your thoughts?
I have so many. My brain moves a million miles an hour about this problem because there's so many and so much connection. But I think the biggest takeaway is you can do something about this right now, today. Every small decision that you're making, what foods you purchase, where you drive, if you're using gas, every decision you make today will affect it. And I think starting small and growing from there, and this is something that every single person has a skin in the game and can and needs to get involved in. You know, there's so many resources. Organizing and not trying to be a bunch of people, you know, by themselves trying to solve this problem like I felt. But really it is the people coming together, unifying and to solve this problem. And so I think start today. Do something now. Do something with the food you choose to eat. Decide not to eat meat today, kind of thing. So I think that's something that I think is a big thing where I'm like, yes, you can do something today when you go to the grocery store right now. And then hopefully that will lead to more change on a bigger scale.
Thank you. That's amazing. You're absolutely correct. And I love that message of hope, because truly there are solutions. We can actually be in hope that all this can be changed around. And it's just like, I'll use, I guess, the women's movement to get the vote, or the civil rights movement to find, you know, voting equality and equality of people of color and or all races in the United States. It's really, we have these solutions, and so take action. And the personal scale really counts. And at the same time, it's really about getting the fossil fuel industry to change over to renewable industry. That's the bottom line here. That's what's putting the most carbon into the air, is the fossil fuel, the burning of fossil fuels. So we can work with votes. You can work with talking with your representatives. You can blog about it. You can do this like a radio show like we're doing today about it. Just getting the word out to have people take action. Write your public service commissioners who oversee your electric or, you know, industry in your state and your city, and talk to them and really get this grassroots movement going. Tongue twister here. And work with the youth. I think really educating, working with the science teachers perhaps in schools and even your faith community, as we've been talking about. So multiple ways to get the word out. Find the facts. Go research. Go to theclimaterealityproject.org And of course, if you want to find out more about Claire Young, ballerina, dance teacher, artist, go to claireyoungart.com. That's claireyoungart.com. And Claire, it's been delightful to have you on the Peace Brain Show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for just sharing your thoughts on this. It's really important. So take a breath, everyone. We're going to take a pause and go into the Peace Brain meditation for the last few minutes of the show. And I want you just to settle in your chair, to be comfortable, and to realize that even though we came across with a lot of facts and a lot of dire circumstances, and you may have actually experienced some of this personally, where you've been affected by these extreme weather events or other issues, take a breath and know that humanity is beginning to wake up. Humanity is beginning to understand that we do need to change. We need to go to our next level of civilization, of changing our society into a more ecologically sustainable process through renewable energies. So feel comfortable in your chair. Give yourself a grounding cord, which is that beautiful energetic connection between the base of your spine and the center of Mother Earth. I like to envision a beam of light, or maybe a waterfall or a tree trunk coming out of the base of my spine, going all the way down to the center of the planet, and really anchoring well into Mother Earth. And let all of the past and all of the future flow down the grounding cord. This is, you're allowing yourself to be in present moment, present time, and letting your worries and cares from those other times just go back into Mother Earth to be recycled as new energy. And then think about your community, wherever you live in the world. What has your community experienced? What have you and your personal, your family experienced? They say in Atlanta that our number of hot days above 95 degrees are going to like triple or quadruple each year. So things like that, think about. Have you had to run your air conditioner more? Your heat in the winter? Have you run out of water at all? Have you experienced any droughts? These are the tragedies that I hope you have not experienced, but know that this is to bring us back into balance. And feel a balance. Know that you can achieve a balance. The world can do this. Mother Earth is trying to wake us up and tell us we can be in balance again with nature. And so know that there are actions that you can take. So think about that. Give yourself an opportunity to contemplate, what actions can I take today? And maybe it is about changing your eating habits or your garbage habits, I'll say. What you buy and consume and throw away. Maybe it's about lowering your thermostat. Maybe it's about changing the way you drive, taking public transportation. Maybe it's about calling up your senator or representative and having a conversation, or writing a letter or a blog post. Maybe it's about talking to your faith community about how the morality, the ethics can be put into this equation. It really opens hearts of people. For that's really what we're talking about here, is opening our hearts to not only our family and those closest to us, or our neighbors or our community, but to everyone on the planet. And that this, in order to survive in a healthy state, we need to take action. It is imperative. So know that the climate crisis can be changed, it can be mitigated, it can be brought into balance. And start to make a list, I suggest and invite you to, of what you can do yourself and what your family can do, what perhaps your children can do, excuse me. And so that you can join the voices of the youth. Join the voices of those scientists, the people who are bringing this to the attention of all of us, that yes, we have solutions. Yes, we can make a difference. Yes, we can turn the tide. And take a breath, and thank you for beginning to take action, for just listening today. I really appreciate it. You can open your eyes, be in present moment, for know that it is this moment right here that you have already started to take action. You have already started to make a difference. And it is in the present moment that we create our future. So thanks and congratulations on doing that. So I want to thank you for tuning into the Peace Brain Show today. I really appreciate it. And to my guest, Claire Young, you can find out, as I said, more about this training by Al Gore and sign up for the next one, perhaps in your area, or if you want to travel around the world to the next training. Actually, there's one in June in Brisbane, Australia. And then I know he'll be putting some more in the United States fairly soon. You can go to climaterealityproject.com. .org. And if you want to find out more about me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, or email me at hello@peacebrain.org. So now please go forth and activate your peace brain and put your peace park and your place of dialogue that can create peace in the world on our World Peace Trails map. I thank you for tuning in today to the Peace Brain Show. Check with us later. Talk to you soon. Namaste. Many blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace master plans for your business or organization, and her book, #OptForPeace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio, Station 1, every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.